This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Sunday, May 26th, the greatest spectacle in racing returns. The Indianapolis 500 on NBC and Peacock. 33 of the world's fastest drivers go head-to-head for a chance to kiss the bricks, taste the milk, and claim their place in racing history. Experience the drama, the pageantry, the tradition. Live from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Indy 500. Sunday, May 26th on NBC and Peacock. Or listen on Sirius XM NBC Sports Channel. For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
The Ravens made OBJ an offer he couldn't say no to, or an offer he could. Yeah, I'm going to make an offer he can't refuse. That was horrible. But my point is, they put the money on the table for OBJ. Now will they put the money on the table for Lamar Jackson? I knew it was too much to hope that that wouldn't have been noticed yesterday by the folks in the
back. How could it not be?
I knew I'd have to deal with it again someday. And since there's nothing else happening today, we get that at the top of the show.
Nice. Whatever. We needed that
early so we can get to it. Hey, today I came dangerously close, and I keep dancing on the line of just saying screw it when the alarm goes off and remaining in bed.
Oh,
today
you won't. You're all talk.
Not quite
you're
as close
talk.
As I've ever come, but I'm getting closer and closer. Like, you know, you put your hand toward the flame, and boy, it would feel good to stay in bed right now. This is just one of those days where we're a couple of weeks removed from the draft. There's not much going on. We could have just both slept in. Maybe that's what we need to do. We need to coordinate it, because one of the reasons, and I kid you not, that I push through on the days where I don't feel like getting up and doing the show is I know that you're waiting for me and that you're there and that you got up early.
Right.
You
drove down a highway.
Through your field of chicken crap. You got into your Tesla and you drove it all the way.
Right.
That long 5-minute drive from the mean streets of Greenwich to the NBC Sports facility. And you're
18,
there and you're ready.
Right.
And you're made up.
Yeah,
you know,
no, that would be, you're right. That would be a low blow. All you got
to
do is like roll out of the bed and pick whatever shirt's on the couch next to the bed and then walk up some stairs and do the show. You're right. I would feel disrespected, but don't like if you didn't feel good, you don't have to go that far. But I do appreciate, you know, you caring about me at least and that getting you that extra little bump to get you out of the bed in the morning going, you know, let me not screw over Chris and leave him hanging here this morning. Thanks for that. I do appreciate that.
We did talk about heaven and hell yesterday and my own personal beliefs. I didn't realize I was a universalist. I've heard from some folks that my beliefs fall into that category whatever it would be. But I still have 12 years of Catholic school, so guilt is a powerful thing.
Yes.
And I could not bring myself to fake an illness. I can't do it. Because I wouldn't enjoy the fruits of the fake illness, because I would know I faked the illness and I would feel guilty about it. So maybe they're doing something right at all those Catholic schools where they hit you in the knuckles with a ruler, although I don't think they do that anymore. They didn't do that necessarily when I was there. Maybe I witnessed it once, but I don't think it actually happened to me.
That was a little before your time, even the ruler to the wrist and hand. That was 40s and 50s kids. Is that what we're talking about that had to deal with that?
I think 60s too.
Yeah.
I think 60s. Right. I used to hear stories about And I don't know whether they were seminarians. They were called brothers that weren't priests yet. And I used to hear stories about how they would be like mean and physical and like throw people out windows and stuff. Although I can't imagine that they did that unless it was on the first floor. But I did once accidentally bump into a substitute teacher who was a nun when I was in first grade, and she dug her nails into my arm and broke the skin.
Wow.
And when I went home and my mom said what happened, of course I couldn't tell on a nun or I'd go to hell. So I said it was some older kid that did it.
But damn, how times have changed.
I think when my mom called, I think they knew.
Oh, damn. It could have been Florio Catholic School.
I think the nun okay. was a substitute teacher for a reason. I think she probably had. I don't think that was the first day she ever dug her fingers into
a
6-year-old's arm and busted the skin.
Yeah, needs to do a little praying and forgiveness there about, you know, maybe I should be a little nicer and less temperamental, Mrs. Nunn. Maybe that. But can we go back?
I could continue to pull that thread, but go ahead. You say something. Yeah, keep save me from saying something that's going to
get me in
trouble.
Well, it was kind of fun. It's getting dicey and fun here. It is kind of getting good here. But I did want to talk about how horrible your Godfather impression was. I mean, that was horrible.
Oh, I know. It's fine.
I just can't get over it.
I admit it.
Should we play it back again? We should play it again.
No,
it almost sounded like
we shouldn't.
You were like trying to be the Godfather, and it sounded like Rocky Balboa's voice almost. It was so bad. I can't believe it.
It's fine. It was so bad that it doesn't need to be heard again. Hey, let me say this. I still don't have heat in my studio because we had three HVAC units blown out by the power surge on Wednesday night. And we had our guy that takes care of everything. He came and he hooked it up so we had heat in the house, but we don't have heat up here. So I've had to dress warmly while we wait for heat because it's still getting cold at night. We're at that time of year where it gets fairly
nice during the day.
During the day, but it still gets cold at night. And it's cold. It's cold up here right now. I'm surprised you can't see my breath. One other thing, too, before we get into the meat of the show today, and this is one of those days where there isn't a ton of stuff, so we have a little more leeway. And we talked about this just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to mention it at all. And then I got upset with myself for saying, it's no big deal. Don't mention it because it didn't happen at school and no kids got killed. But there was still another shooting yesterday. And we're so freaking numb to it that, like, the first question we ask now is, are any kids killed? Okay, fine. How many was it? Fewer than 10? Okay, fine. Move on. We're so used to it.
There's no doubt. Yeah.
No. Like, our human capacity can't continue
to
press
up.
Pause on our lives and grieve as we should collectively and search for answers as we should collectively. And I don't even, like, is anybody even trying to come up with answers? And I know that
not really.
That, like, you've got one side that says we got to do something about guns. Well, guess what, folks? That ain't going to happen. So
no,
we better come up with another solution. I mean, let's just be realistic about it.
Yeah.
All right? Let's be practical about it. We're not going to magically eliminate
the number of guns that
can kill people.
Right.
That when you put them in the hands of someone who is intent on killing someone, those aren't – they're going to be there. Whoever develops the desire to show up at a former workplace, to show up at a school, to show up wherever, and as I've said, it's one of the risks of living in America in the year 2023. When you leave your house, you get hit by a car, you get eaten by a lion that's escaped from the local zoo, you could get struck by lightning, and you could get shot and killed where you're standing in line at the bank, while you're going to church, while you're in the grocery store, while you're anywhere in public. That's one of the risks. Is it a significant risk? No, but it's still a risk, just like getting hit by lightning. That's not a significant risk, but it's still a risk. Getting hit by a car or a bus or anything on four wheels, not a significant risk, but it's still a risk. So in the catalog of risks that we assume when we leave our homes, one of the reasons I rarely do, is you could get shot and killed out in a public place without warning, without notice, and then all of a sudden it starts happening. And I can't even imagine what would go through your mind when you're in a setting like that. So... And this, look, this is a football show. We're here to provide a diversion. But I'd love to know, like what do the politicians do all day? I don't know what they do other than argue with each other. Do they do anything other than argue with each other?
Doesn't seem like it right now.
And raise money?
Yeah.
And cater to their bases on both sides? I'm trying to be straight down the middle on this.
Sure.
The system is corrupt on both sides. That And each side is saying how the other side's evil, and nobody can agree on anything. And so what do they do? What are they doing all day to protect us? Our elected representatives that are there to protect us, that are there to establish policies that protect us. The children first and foremost. And that was why I was so upset about it 2 weeks ago. We can't protect our kids. Shit, we can't protect anybody. It's every man for himself, which is going to make it like the old West. Like, that's what we're devolving back to.
Yeah, we are.
It's going to be the OK Corral, where everybody's going to be carrying a gun, and everybody's going to have an itchy trigger finger, and somebody's going to look at somebody sideways, and the next thing you know, there's going to be a duel out in the middle of a dusty street.
Were you looking at me?
Yeah. So where are our leaders? Where are the people that are going to provide the ideas and find a way to use their personalities and their skills to implement them? Like, where are they? Like we need a JFK, and I don't care anything about his politics. We need somebody who can lead us, somebody who means well, somebody who has good ideas, and somebody who will stand up for what's right. But the problem is it's impossible, because before you can even be in a position to do it, you got to pick one of these two sides. And whichever side you pick, the other side's going to hate you. And your side's going to love you, and they're going to fight, and they're going to fight, and they're going to fight, and they're never going to get anything done. And we're going to be right where we are indefinitely, or until our country collapses. And I hate to use that kind of hyperbole,
yeah,
because that's what they use on each side to blame the other.
Yeah.
You're trying to ruin our country. No, you're trying to ruin our country. Meanwhile, while everybody's blaming each other for ruining the country's being ruined.
Yeah. No, it's you're preaching the choir on this one, Mike. You could put me under the, you know, one of those people that is a little bit like, I'm exhausted by all of it. All of it. I've given up on politics. I don't even, like, there's a part of me that don't really give a damn anymore. I don't. I'm so sick of it.
I just want somebody to provide leadership.
I know.
I want somebody
it's exhausting.
In a position of power and authority to do something other than engage in the same shit that we see every day.
No.
Vying for
broken
air time.
You said it.
Fighting with this person and catering to the base, saying the right thing on the right topic at the right time so I can send out a mass email to get people to give me more money. Like, when does the work start? What do the leaders do? I'd love to know. I'd love to shadow some people and see what you do. And of course, if you were there watching, they would act like they're doing something other than what they do. But I'd love to know what these folks are doing, because what they should be doing is coming together and finding a solution to this problem.
Yeah.
That only exists in our country. To this level. Where
yeah, well, it's
every
not even
week,
comparable
every other
to anybody
week.
Else. Yeah, not even yeah. comparable. I mean, we have more
so
deaths
than a month. So something's clearly wrong. Most,
yeah, clearly. Clearly. I mean, clearly, Mike, to your point, there's a school shooting. Or what happened yesterday? There was a shooting at a bank in Kentucky, right? I literally don't even stop to read about it anymore. I just go, oh, well, hashtag as expected, guns everywhere, nobody cares. So I don't know. It's just the way it is. It's like I have to, for my own mental health, not like care about that stuff anymore, because I found it to be troubling to me, and then to the point where it was making my day worse, to where my wife would be like, what's going on? I'd be like, oh, I don't know. Damn, I read the news. I don't know why I did it. I don't know why I did it. And I've tried to back off because of that, because it's a no-win fight right now. And I don't mean to sound like that guy, but, you know, I'm not in the position of right now is talking a pro football talk to change a bunch of these things. So I've just thrown my hands up in the air and give it up a little bit.
I know, but isn't that sad?
It's extremely
isn't that sad that we're just, at that point?
It is. The whole country. I'm literally like, America, I give up. I give up. I don't care. Sure, you do what you got to do. I don't care. Give up. I gave up.
I mean, they feed us all these ideas that we're supposed to walk around with and proudly salute the flag and be patriotic. I mean, our leaders have to give us something to be patriotic about. Collectively, we have to work together to be patriotic. We have to care for each other. Like, at what point, and I don't know how, again, I can't even begin to get to the bottom of it, but we have broken individuals throughout this country. How did they get broken? How did they get broken to the point where they would do something like what they are doing? Because, again, the guns are there. We can't remove that ingredient from the equation. So we're going to solve this. We got to figure out why there are so many broken people, what we can do to unbreak them, or what we can do to properly flag them. And I'm concerned as I say that because, of course, the overreaction is anybody who ever says boo, anybody who ever says anything to remotely manifest a potential future intention to show up at a bank or a school or a church or a store or wherever with a gun, we just lock them away and throw away the key. That's not the answer either. So I don't know. The whole thing to me is a game. It's about acquiring power. It's about acquiring wealth. It's about anything but doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's the right thing is not really. Nobody cares about the right thing anymore. The morally right thing, taking care of people, that's out the window. The world's changed that way.
But isn't that what they're supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
Well, what the hell?
No, I know. It's just me. What can you do for me? I need more. That's our country right now, and it's a shame, like you said.
And where are the future leaders? I've paid enough attention to politics over the last 40 years that you have an idea of the next wave of people who can truly rise up and lead and develop and mature into those positions and who mean well and who have this destiny where they are the ones that will help guide the country. Like, who the hell are they? Like, where are they? Where are they? Where are they hiding? On either side. Like, I don't care. I'm fine.
They've given up
with
on that. Those kind of people have given up on that.
Within,
they moved on to something
doing other
else.
Stuff.
Exactly. They said, "The hell with that business.
Like, screw
and
this,
dealing with those crazy
screw this
people.
Crazy
right.
Cesspool
I'll go over here and do this and make more
sides.
Money." Right. Exactly. I'm not saying either side. Yeah. Who the hell would want to deal with it? Right. I mean, that's the biggest thing. But I know. All right. Well, good talk. Hopefully you feel better. I don't feel any better.
I don't.
But it does. But it needs to be. You're not wrong for bringing it up. I mean, it is crazy that we've gotten to that point.
I mean, because our choice is to either become completely numb to this dystopian reality in which we now reside, or collectively say no more. Collectively say we got to do something. Collectively say instead of calling up your local representative and pissing and moaning about whatever culture war issue is out there that they're using to manipulate us, whatever it is that they're using to distract us from the fact that they aren't doing anything, we need to start calling them up and demanding that they do something to improve society, to protect our kids, to protect us. So when you do go to the grocery store, you're not walking around with this tiny piece in the back of your mind ready to fight, flight, or hide, or whatever the three words are that are inconsistent. Hide, fight. Which one is it? What do? I don't have a gun. Maybe I should carry a gun. See, that's the thing. It's going to be the Old West. I'm just going to stay home. That's my solution. I'm done. Hey, society, I'm done. There was an episode of Family Guy where Peter Griffin decided to make his own country. I think it was Peter Topia or something like that. I'm out.
Right.
I'm done. Right. I'm opting out of society. I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to order all my food in, and I'm just not leaving.
All right, good.
All right.
Well, it's not that different from what you've been doing anyway. So that sounds good. Sounds like
maybe that's what I've been evolving to.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. Right.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record! For the United States, unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock. For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record! For the United States, unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long for Darwin Nunez to make an impression.
The hope of rewriting history.
He's his calling card.
And the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA, and Peacock.
Let's get to it. Okay, so some aftermath of the OBJ move that we spent so much time talking about yesterday. The report is, and this came from NFL Media, I believe, that Lamar Jackson, the Ravens quarterback, actively recruited Odell Beckham Jr. to sign with the Ravens. And hey, that's good. Lamar's engaged. That means that when he said to the team March 2nd, I want to be traded, it was just a leverage deal. When he tweeted a couple of weeks ago his farewell to Baltimore, it wasn't real. It was just posturing to try to get his contract. He's not done. That was one of my lingering questions in the aftermath of the news that he said he wanted out. And he said goodbye. Is he done? Because we know how determined, how hard-headed, how stubborn he can be. And there's nothing wrong with that. I am too. But once he's done, is he done? And he's not done because he actively recruited Beckham to show up. And now I think the tables get turned and Beckham actively recruits him to do a deal. And it occurred to me yesterday, it won't surprise me if Beckham actually acts as, and I may have said this yesterday morning, but I can't remember. Acts as a liaison.
Acts as a
de facto agent for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Just get everybody together and get this damn thing done.
Well, I don't doubt that. At least mend some, you know, mend some bridges or fences or whatever the hells they say with that saying there. But at least maybe he can, bridge that gap of communication and I'll make Lamar feel better about the Ravens. Again, because it could be hard, right? As a player, you're going, wait, they're not giving me what they want, what I want. They don't like me. And that doesn't mean that either, right? They're going, no, we do like you. We're willing to give you more money than just about anybody that's ever played the game. We just maybe don't want to go to where you want us to go, right? I do think they're still, I mean, you know that. I know that. Of course the Ravens want Lamar Jackson. Of course. And, yeah, this gives us a nice little inkling that he hasn't closed the door on that chapter of the of his life or his football career that way. Also added on to that, to just go, the options that are out there right now, they're not better than the Baltimore Ravens. They're not. They're, you know, we talked about it a little yesterday. You explained the situation, right? And then we talked about the Ravens themselves. The Ravens are they were a Super Bowl caliber team last year. They're going to be in that same department or conversation again this year. I don't envision them falling off as long as they can have Lamar healthy and be there. So that's encouraging. I think it is encouraging. And now what has to be done? You know, we know their contract, but is this non-exclusive franchise tag? Does he need the sweetener, whatever? What do they need to do to get him in the building for OTAs? That's the next thing, because that's what you would like. You'd like him to be there for off-season stuff too and start to build your team that way.
This idea that signing OBJ as an olive branch to Lamar Jackson to finally get him to show up, to the extent that they overpaid Beckham, and they clearly have overpaid Odell Beckham Jr. I have yet to see anyone credibly argue that Odell Beckham Jr. is currently worth $15 million fully guaranteed on a one-year deal. They weren't bidding against someone else who was at $14.9 million. This wasn't one of those auctions where you're throwing up the paddle. Hey, do I hear 14, 14.1, 14.1, I got 14.1, what about 14.2? No, it was probably 3-6 as a base with incentives. I think that's where the Jets were going to be.
Yeah.
Or this. 15.
Right.
They weren't bidding with anyone. They weren't competing against anyone. They're trying to get Lamar Jackson to choose to stay. So they can't. And again, Lamar, the agent, should be pissed. I've been here busting my ass and I can't get a fair deal. And you go out and you give an above market contract to a guy who's got an ACL issue and he hasn't played in more than a year. And who the hell knows what he can do now? And his best work is well in the rearview mirror and this and that and the other. And you're giving him all that money. And where can I get mine? They've finally, I think, broken from the way that people typically would look at situations like this. And they're trying to look at it from Lamar's perspective.
Yeah.
Lamar is going to be happy that Beckham is there.
That's right.
And maybe now more likely to finally say yes.
That's
especially
right.
if Beckham can find a way to be the one who gets through to Lamar. That is what I think they're counting on, Beckham being the one to get through to Lamar.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. I don't, you know. Yeah, they're paying more than it seems like anybody else is willing to pay for Odell Beckham Jr. But I think they're also, they're paying for the services you're talking about. You know, they're talking about a guy who is an incredible leader. Again, you talk to anybody in football, they're going to tell you he's an incredible leader. He's got incredible people skills. So they like that for their culture, their football team. And then they're betting and maybe paying a premium on, okay, you know, we're in a little bit of a spot here. We might not get a difference-making receiver where we're at in the first round, or we have another position we want to address. So they're going to pay the premium on the guy that's really the most talented guy that's out there on the free agent market at receiver, except we just have that question mark about the injury and the health status. But they're going to bet on all the things you're talking about, you know, being the liaison, being, you know, a great guy in the locker room, and then being, they're going to bet on the potential that he is healthy and then what he can do, you know, as a specimen on the football field. And I think that's going to make Lamar Jackson happy, like you said. Who cares? Lamar obviously has a relationship with Odell and likes this. And obviously, I don't think the Baltimore would have overpaid him if they felt like, man, Lamar's going to be pissed if we throw him an extra $5 or $6 million.
Right.
You know, so that's the other positive thing of this situation, too.
Yeah, no, I agree completely that they wouldn't have done this to antagonize Lamar Jackson.
Right.
They've done this as a sweetener. They've done this as an incentive. They've done this as a way to get out of this maze that they're in, that they can't find a path to the other side of, bottom line. So I think this is part of the broader process of getting Lamar Jackson, not just to sign before training camp or to accept his one-year franchise tender with a sweetener before week one. They need him there for the offseason program.
Yeah,
and
it's
look,
a new offense.
To the extent that Lamar Jackson is considering following the Kirk Cousins path to the open market. And remember, it was 2016 and 2017. Franchise tag. And then when the Washington football team was looking at a 44% bump in the $24 million or so that Cousins made in 2017, they let him walk away. Both years that he was franchise tagged, he showed up for all of the offseason program. He accepted the tender, and he showed up because he knew, I have to play as well as I can. I have to be as prepared as I can be. I have to have the best year that I can have to keep this going. Tag 1 year. Well, if I stay away until week one, I'm not going to play well enough that anyone's going to want me in 2017. They're not going to tag me. No one's going to want me. Second year, I got to show up and I got to be there and I got to play well. So when I become a free agent, they're going to want me. If Lamar boycotts, if Lamar stays away up until week one, or if he skips regular season games, he's going to be less attractive next year. And if he is following this Kirk Cousins path, then he needs to be there for the start of the offseason program.
Yes, he does.
Now, the problem is 32.7 isn't good enough. That's the problem.
No.
When you look at where the market is,
right,
when you look at where he should be,
right,
32. I still don't know why that, and I've tried to figure it out. They changed the formula for calculating the franchise tags with the 2011 CBA, I think.
Right.
But I don't know why it's so low. Why is it so low? Why when you have guys pushing $50 million now, and you have multiple guys north of 40, various guys north of 40, how in the hell is the franchise tag languishing at 32.4 for a quarterback? Because if it was between 40 to 45, then it's a no-brainer. You sign it, you show up, you have a big year, and you do it all again next year. And then you sign it, you show up, and then you become an unrestricted free agent in 2025 because they're not going to give you a 44% bump over that $38 million next year. Although maybe they would. I don't know. 44% of that's like 54. When you add all three together, you go 1 year at a time. That's not all that crazy. But regardless, my point is this. He needs to be there for his own strategy to work. He needs to be there, learn the offense, click with OBJ. But the question now is, would he be showing up on a one-year deal, a two-year deal, a three-year deal? What's he going to get? How much is guaranteed? And how much can OBJ help connect these two sides that are as fractured as the two sides of politics that we were talking about earlier, where it feels like there is no middle ground? Maybe OBJ is the guy that pulls both of them toward a middle and gets it all done.
Yeah, like what's next? What's the next part of this? Can OBJ get Lamar in the building, in the facility in Baltimore, right? Can he do that? You know, what do they need to do to make the things happen that you're talking about? you know, to make him feel like, hey, come on, we got to be out there for OTAs. You're right. It only benefits him. It does, you know, for all the scenarios you laid out the right way. In a case, in case this stays this way on the franchise tag and even they give him the sweetener, you want to be at your best. And, yeah, it is going to be a different offense with Todd Monken running the show there. So I would want to think that. In the case he goes down that Kirk Cousins road, right, which I don't think – I wouldn't suggest. It's a little riskier for a guy like Lamar and the style of football he plays, but he could pull it off. It's not crazy. It's just – it's a riskier proposition than Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, I mean, you knew what he was and where he was going to be in the style of football he played. So he was willing to risk, you know, it was a less risky chance than, you know, a guy who, yeah, he wants to stand there and dice you up with his arm. But if things get dicey, man, it's a 360 and it's go gadget legs and it's around the edge and make people miss and lower a shoulder and spin off that guy. And that's where it's different. So I feel like the franchise tag thing would be, you know, last-ditch option type of thing as far as going that route. I don't think either one of us would want to see Lamar do that. There's money on the table here. Hopefully they can get that done. And what the next step is, I don't know. But hopefully they can get him into the building like you're talking about. And I think that would be a big thing, is just practice and maybe get them in the same room to where they can hash some of these things out.
Off-season programs
few weeks.
For some teams have already opened. Right. For other teams, they open next week. But the early phases really aren't much of anything. It's phase two and phase three that are the keys. But, yes, it would be critical. With a new offense, new offensive coordinator, and now a new weapon like OBJ, it's critical for Lamar Jackson to be there. And I'd like to think the Ravens have a plan. They are not one of the dysfunctional organizations out there, although what's been happening with Lamar Jackson falls in the category of dysfunction. It's not their fault per se, but at some point it's incumbent on them to be the ones to find the solution.
Yeah, it's not their fault, but it's their
situation
problem.
They didn't create.
Right, right.
Exactly. That's the great way to put it.
Yeah.
And instead of sitting back saying it's not our fault, they just need to roll up their sleeves and go clean up the mess and figure out how to do it. And I'm just convinced after digesting this for a day and a half that the OBJ signing is calculated in large part.
Yeah, it's positive
to solve the Lamar Jackson problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm trying to foresee what he's going to do for that team this year on the football field, and maybe it will be a pleasant surprise. But I don't expect a $15 million contribution on the field. I think that's just part of it. I think the other part of it is he's that magnet to bring in Lamar Jackson so they can get down to business and get themselves ready to go be competitive. But could be wrong. We haven't seen him in a while.
That's what I mean.
So we don't know what he can do.
That's right. It's the potential's there, and we know that when this guy is close to healthy, he's one of the freakiest players we've ever seen. And, of course, what you've talked about here with Lamar Jackson and mending that relationship, and I think he fits their culture. I do. And they're a team that's got a real need for that position. And I think if you were going to take a shot on one guy that was out there and available right now, where you said, wait, this guy right here, he could be the one where we could all be at the end of the year going, damn, he's still one of the better receivers in all of football. They're taking a risk with that. But I think it's calculated, like you said, and there's a lot of reasons that went into that stew to make it happen.
All right. Again, the off-season program is the point at which players can congregate. They can have communications with coaches, although coaches can't be involved in the first phase. It's supervisory by strength and conditioning coaches. Mike Reese of ESPN reported that Mac Jones, the Patriots quarterback, was one of a handful of Patriots players who have been a daily presence at team facilities in the offseason, and that's allowed if you choose to be there. But it's not like he's there meeting with Bill O'Brien, meeting with Bill Belichick. There are strict limits on what can and can't be done. And I just wonder how much
they can't
really
do anything about that, Mike. Right.
Right.
There's nothing.
Right. How do you police that? The league that doesn't police Jack Diddley Squad when it comes to all the rules that get violated all the time, except when they decide we're going to smack one team because they made us look bad, because they lied to us, because they were doing something else we didn't like and we couldn't really prove it, so we're going to get them for something else. Like, you could get every team, I would expect, for violating the rules about the amount of contact that can happen between coach and quarterback in the offseason.
Yeah, you could. And, like, what I want to say with those situations, you're right, versus how do you police it? Second up, it's the player's choice. He wants to do it. You're going to tell, like, hey, grown man Mac Jones, how dare you work hard and try to get better and get an edge on these rest of these competitive people in football? Like, if they're policing that, then, like, screw off. I don't know what else to say. But, yeah, it's Mac Jones. He knows it's a big year, Mike, and there is no way to stop some of that stuff. I was always a guy that took 2 weeks off and then, okay, it was going to be back in the facility a little bit. It was going to work out. And, oh, wait, the quarterback coach, you know, he third day saw me in there. Hey, why don't you come in tomorrow? Let's watch third downs from last year or something like that. Of course that's what happened. I mean, yeah, I was looking to get better. That's why I was there. I was looking to, you know, get a little advantage on the guys that weren't there. Be a little teacher's pet. Hey, here's an apple on your desk, coach. How you doing today? Right. I mean, all those things for all the right reasons. And I'm not shocked to hear Mac Jones do that, but you're right. The NFL can't do anything about it. And I would think that, yeah, he's hopefully getting a little head start with Billy O'Brien and some of the things they want to lay down the groundwork for in that offense.
I do want to be clear on this, though. When you were playing, the rules were different.
They were different.
They are now.
They were.
And I remember one of the frustrations of John Gruden when he got back into coaching
right.
after a 9-10 year
right.
break. I remember interviewing him back early.
He did an interview with you?
Raiders.
What was he thinking?
He did multiple. I guess he thought I'll be nice to this crazy SOB and see whether it gets him to look the other way when he otherwise should be criticizing me properly and justifiably for things I've done and said and games I've won and games I've lost. But anyway, he was very agitated by this new reality that
right.
you can't work with the guys. And why is that? And he basically said the same thing you said. The guy wants to do it. The guy wants to be there. He wants to get better. Why do we have these dumb artificial rules? And I think he finally figured out, just do what you're going to do.
Yeah.
When have we – look at it this way. Here's as simple as I can make it. When have we ever seen or heard of a team getting in trouble
exactly.
for having impermissible contact
right.
with coach and quarterback? When have we ever seen it? And,
right.
and it was gift wrap 3 years ago.
With Brady.
With Byron Leftwich.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Showed up at the wrong house with a bag full of footballs.
Yeah, right. And we know he had the playbook before he was even on the football team. And we know Gronk had the playbook before he was on the football team. And
oh, that was a joke.
Done.
Oh, that's another one of those,
jokes with no punchline.
Stephen Ross was joking
was
with
joking.
Brian Flores about losing games. That's a big joke, funny joke. Where's the punchline? Rob Gronkowski was joking when he said openly and blatantly that he had the Patriots or the Buccaneers playbook.
I've had that
months
for
before
weeks.
Becoming a member
right,
of the team.
Yeah.
That's a great joke, Gronk. You should run with that as your post-retirement career.
But you're right. If they didn't do anything there, they're not going to do anything ever. That's not happening.
Yeah. So and I guess it's good that Mac's there. And again, if you're going to work out anywhere, you work out in the team facility because if something happens, you're covered. It's basically free insurance. You get your salary for the year. They can't try to put you on the non-football injury list because it happened on their premises. And if to the extent that he's there and he's maybe mending fences with Bill Belichick or they're trying to find a common ground, I don't know. It seems so dysfunctional last year. It's going to take more than one offseason, I think, to get it back to where it needs to be. But this is where Bill O'Brien maybe plays the role of OBJ and takes the dysfunction out of the relationship by his mere presence and helps connect two guys that seemed hopelessly disconnected by the end of last season.
Yeah, I think you're saying it right. You know, as a player, you want to start the new year. You want to turn the page. Like, man, that last year wasn't that good. Let's start a new one and a new thought and a new vibe. And he understands it's year three and how big it is for him. Yeah, he's got Billy O'Brien in there, so he's got some things to learn and all that. He wants to give them a good taste in their mouth, too, to be like, hey, Max ready. Max on his game this year. You know, Max been here from the start. He's ready to go. Like, that's kind of what sets forth the culture and the lifeline of a football team and gets it going in the right direction. So not surprised to hear that Max hanging around the facility especially in a year like this. And, you know, there's a backup that gets thrown into the conversation with his name quite often, and I'm sure every now and then wakes him up in the middle of the night and he's like, Bailey Zappe, okay, I got to get to work. I mean, that's what psycho, like, starting quarterbacks, that's how they think. And that became a thing this year, too. So I'm sure he's going, wait, you know, Bailey, is he here? He's not here. Oh, good. I'm going in the facility. I'm going to get a few hours on him. It's all the competitive, good culture building things you need. And yes, it does give Bill Belichick and the rest of the group, you know, more confidence, too, in that, hey, my guy's here working, you know, and that starts to filter through the building and filter to the locker room, and players start doing it, too.
And it's important for the Patriots this year because they are in a division.
Big year.
Where it's going to be hard to stay out of the basement in the AFC East with the Bills, with the Jets, with the Dolphins. It's going to be difficult. And I can't believe we're saying that. We're not that far removed from the Patriots being the only team worth a crap in that division and everybody else being also Rams and cannon fodder for the Patriots. And now the Patriots are the ones who are the cannon fodder if they don't get things figured out and get pointed in the right direction, because all the teams right now are better than them. One way for the Patriots to get better is via the draft, which is coming up in just 16 days. I had to pause to do the math. See, that's what happens when the countdown clock isn't up. Do we have the countdown clock? Because it's been right there, right there. And did I finally figure out the right... Hey, I finally figured out how to do
that.
This.
Way to go.
There it is.
Coachable.
There it is. Countdown clock to the draft when we return. Some draft news that is percolated up. Now they're messing with me. Now it's down there. Get out of here. We'll be back with some draft news when PFT Live continues right after this.